This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ed Murphy is an astronomer from the University of Virginia, joins us on occasion to keep us updated and informed about what's going on beyond the clouds. It's good to see you. Happy summer.
Happy summer to you.
We were just talking about the celebrations at your house with, of course, tomorrow is the last day of school for Albemarle County.
That's right.
And you have a little boy who's going to graduate from fifth grade. That's fantastic.
That's right. Yeah.
Congratulations.
He's moving up to middle school.
That's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
Middle school is a different world.
That's right. It is.
That's when a lot of the fun stuff starts.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. That's great. So let's get right to it. There's only two flights of our space shuttle left. That's it?
That's right. On the books right now.
Then it hits the mothballs.
And that's right. And they'll be sent off eventually at some point, sent off to museums. But for those of us that that follow the spaceflight program, of course, we remember that there was something that came before the space shuttles. But most young people today, the space shuttle first flew in 1981. So most young people today think that the space shuttle was the only thing that ever flew. And there's only two flights left now.
They don't even remember rockets.
No, that's right. And the Apollo program is something that they probably saw in Tom Hanks' movie, Apollo 13. And they don't really know that there was anything other than the space shuttle.
Yeah. Well, I've told you that my family, not me, I was dropped off at the grandparents in Atlanta, but my brother, my sister, my mother, my father, and all the cousins and the whole extended family was down there in Florida for the moon launch.
They
stood right there and watched it. And they still tell me about it, how loud it was and beautiful it was. And that thing went all the way to the moon.
That's right. I hear that all the time. Anyone who's been lucky enough to go down and see a launch, they say it's one of those things that you'll remember for the rest of your life.
So what's going to happen to the space shuttles? Are museums scrambling to make a bid and host one of these things?
That's exactly what's happening. NASA has offered the space shuttles to museums. Museums have to raise the money to mothball them and make them safe. And there's only three space shuttles. There were five built total. Two have been lost in accidents, Columbia and Challenger. So now we have Endeavour, Atlantis, and Discovery. Discovery has already been promised to the Smithsonian Institution. So there's really only two space shuttles that are available to go to other museums out there. And they are competing against one another to host them and house them permanently.
So who will win? Obviously, the Air and Space Museum will get one, right?
They're getting Discovery because of the three space shuttles. It's the oldest of the three. It's been significant because after each of the accidents, it was the first shuttle to fly again. And all of the interesting missions that it's been involved in throughout the years, it's the most important of the three, historically the most important of the three shuttles. So it's going to the Smithsonian. And the other two, I don't know where they're going.
So Atlantis and Endeavour, one of those would likely end up on the West Coast if Discovery's going to be at the Smithsonian.
That's right. Everyone's playing exactly that game. So they're wondering, okay, one will have to go to the West Coast. And so now if we have the East Coast and the West Coast, maybe something in the middle of the country
something
or maybe
Chicago
in the North or something.
Yeah.
Who knows?
That's great. So, but one's not coming to UVA, I guess.
No, yeah, definitely.
That's too
not.
Bad. We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia. The phone lines are open, 977-1070. So the last two flights, what are they?
So the next flight coming up, they're going to it's Discovery going up to the International Space Station on a pretty standard resupply mission. And then the next mission after that, and that's supposed to launch in September. And the next mission after that will be the very last space shuttle mission, and that's going also to the International Space Station, and they're bringing up a very heavy, giant science experiment that's going to look for dark matter in the universe, and that'll be brought up and housed on the International Space Station.
And what is dark matter? We hear that sometimes, you know, astronomers like you looking for dark matter in the universe.
That's right.
What is it?
If I could answer that question, I'd have a Nobel Prize in physics. It's really that. We have no idea what dark matter is. The answer is that we feel its gravity. When we look at things in space like galaxies that are held together by gravity, and we measure the amount of gravity that's required to hold the galaxy together, and then go out and count up all the stars and all the matter in the galaxy, it falls short of explaining the amount of gravity that we see. So there's something out there in space that participates in gravity. It has a gravitational pull associated with it, but it's not made of the same kind of matter that you and I are made of. It is certainly not made of protons and neutrons and electrons or carbon and oxygen. It's just not regular matter. What it is, we don't know because apparently it doesn't interact with regular matter, at least not very often. Otherwise, we would have discovered it in our laboratories now.
But it's the glue that's holding the universe together.
In part, it's gravity is quite, it has gravity associated with it. And in some cases, in some places, we see that dark matter clearly outweighs regular matter. And we know that's true for the universe as a whole. There's about 6 to 7 times as much dark matter as there is regular matter in the universe.
Is it called dark matter just because it's like unknown?
Yeah, mostly, yes. And it's dark because it doesn't give off light or absorb light. It doesn't interact with electromagnetic radiation, radio waves, visible light. And that means that we can't use our telescopes to see it because it doesn't interact with light and all of our telescopes pick up light.
But we know it's there.
All we can do is we feel its gravity. So there are some ideas as to what it might be.
And this is different from a black hole, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which also has a terrific gravity around it and sucks things in.
That's right. But black holes used to be regular stars made of regular matter like you and me. And at the end of their lives, they collapse down and their gravity gets really strong. But they were once regular matter. Now they're a black hole, which we're not really sure what's at the center of a black hole. But it may not be regular matter anymore, but at least we know where it came from. Dark matter, we have no idea.
We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia. So two flights of the space shuttle left, and you have shared with us more than once on this program your personal thoughts about the space shuttle. We went off the rails there for a while. Is that one thought that it was, I don't want to say it's a waste of money, but probably not the best money spent.
It's a very expensive way to get people and cargo into space. It's in fact, probably, I would argue, the most expensive way to get people and cargo into space that mankind ever invented. It's not to take away from the technological side, which is, I mean, it's an amazing machine. It'll go down as one of the greatest machines that humans have built so far. But in terms of access to space, it just turned out to be very, very expensive and also very dangerous.
Let's talk about the Falcon 9 and its launch, which was just recently,
just
right?
Last Friday.
What is the Falcon 9?
So the Falcon 9 is a private company called SpaceX that was founded by Elon Musk, who's the inventor of PayPal and a couple of other online companies. And so he got quite wealthy in the internet boom. He sold off PayPal and he decided to use that money to build rockets. It's one of those things, I guess, that he was always interested in rockets. He found himself having billions of dollars, and so he'd go off and create a company, a private company, completely outside of NASA and the Department of Defense and the aerospace companies who normally have built all of our launch vehicles, and just build a rocket and a capsule and launch them into space.
And so they're just floating around the Earth?
Well, so he's started.
And this is a first, right?
This is a first for a private individual, a private company to do this. And he's built SpaceX now from a very small company that people weren't sure whether it would survive. It now has about 1,000 employees down in Texas, and they're building two different rockets, the Falcon 1, which is a small rocket, mostly initially was a test article to test their ideas. And now you could go out and purchase, if you had a satellite to launch, you could purchase a ride on the Falcon 1 rocket. Or they're building this giant Falcon 9 rocket. It has 9 giant engines on the bottom of it. They launched it for the first time last Friday. And for the most part, the launch was a success. And his goal is to build a capsule that will have astronauts on top of the Falcon 9, and he'll be the first private company ever to launch people into orbit around the Earth.
Which is exactly what President Obama was hoping to do with the space program.
That's
right?
Exactly
to sort of
right.
Privatize some of it.
That's right. President Obama has decided that for low Earth orbit, at least, getting to the space station and back again, it's time to let the private sector take that over from government. And so in his plan, he has shut down NASA's program to build a new rocket and a new capsule and is turning it over to private industry. And it's created quite a bit of heat and debate in Washington right now about whether that was the right decision, whether now is the right time. There are many people who argue that private companies aren't ready, at least up until last Friday. They had never launched a giant rocket.
Looks like they're ready now.
Well, you know, he still hasn't launched his capsule, and he certainly hasn't put people in orbit yet. And there's a stretch between one successful rocket launch and doing it reliably enough that you feel confident that you can put people in it and do it. But we don't know. I mean, people have counted against this guy before. People have thought he'd never do it. And the Falcon 9 flight on Friday was a success.
We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia. The phone lines are open, 977-1070. You're listening to Charlottesville right now. It's about 12 minutes until 5 o'clock. So in light of the space shuttle ending, what is NASA and this new private rocket, what's NASA going to do after the space shuttle?
After the space shuttle, they will be buying, we will get to the space station and back again by buying rides on Russian Soyuz launch vehicles. It'll cost about $50 million per astronaut per launch.
But so a lot cheaper than doing it ourselves.
But that still works out to being cheaper than the space shuttle. Buying it, imagine at $50 million a seat per astronaut, it's still cheaper than the space shuttle was. And then the hope is that if SpaceX develops the Falcon 9 and their Dragon capsule and they get it all working, that NASA will be able to purchase rides for astronauts from SpaceX. And the hope is that other companies, maybe Boeing or Northrop Grumman, will come in and develop their own. They already have expendable rockets in their inventory that we use for launching satellites now. They're interested, or they have talked about developing their own capsules that could be used to launch astronauts. And we might end up with this thriving commercial industry where NASA has multiple companies competing to launch our astronauts.
Which would be the way to do it. It sounds fantastic. If you can put a satellite on top of those rockets, can't you just put a capsule on there with people on it?
And then just do
a splashdown like they used to do in the old days?
It comes down to reliability. We have always insisted that the rockets that launch people be far more reliable than the rockets that launch satellites, because satellites are easily replaceable. I mean, they're expensive, and you don't want to lose one. But they've never insisted on the kind of reliability and backup systems in an expendable rocket that we've had in, say, the space shuttle.
Interesting.
But that's also why the space shuttle is so expensive, because they have backups and backups for the backups, and everything has to be working perfectly.
So along those same lines, what's the status now of human spaceflight? Because I know that's obviously, you know, just been going back and forth to the space station. And where are we now with that?
In the United States, anyhow, the best word I could use to describe what's going on in Washington right now might be chaos. The president has decided.
Not in Washington, Ed.
That's right. The president has declared that we are shutting down the Constellation program, which was the follow-on to the space shuttle. It consisted of a large Ares rocket and an Orion capsule that would go on top. NASA was many years into the design and construction of this, and he has now decided to shut down the production of that rocket. Or stop the design and the building of it. And the reason is it was billions of dollars over budget and years behind schedule. If they stayed on the schedule they were on now, the first launch of human astronauts wouldn't be until 2017 or 2018. And right now we've extended the life of the space station to 2020. So there'd still be a gap of 7 or 8 years where we couldn't launch astronauts, and we'd still have to buy rides from the Russians in those 7 or 8 years.
So it just becomes good money after bad at some point.
That was his opinion. And so then he thought that, or believes that, there's this flourishing potential commercial group out there, groups that would like to launch our astronauts for pay. And he's trying to encourage that sector. So the president has dedicated $6 billion a year to encourage these commercial launch companies to do it.
Now, what about non-manned space exploration, which arguably, you and I have talked before, we've gotten a lot more bang for our buck with these little machines?
I argue that if you're interested in scientific discoveries and knowledge of the universe, we learn far, far more from our robotic missions than we learn from our human spaceflight missions. Those have suffered over the last 5 years or even 8 years because a lot of the money was going into the human spaceflight program. In particular, as they were building this new Ares rocket and Orion capsule, as the budget was blowing up there, they were sucking money out of everything, including the robotic space exploration program.
Just imagine what we could be learning if the money they spend on these rockets, which isn't going to go anywhere, We have put that into robotics. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And you astronomers just must beat your head against the wall because you know this.
That's right. We know this. I'm hoping that the public will realize this. I think a beautiful example of this, I mean, it's a terrible but beautiful example right now, is what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. We've seen the pictures down at 5,000 feet below the Gulf of Mexico. It's all being done with robots. If you look at the pictures, you see these robotic subs. There's not a single human that's been down to that wellhead. They've been cutting that pipe. They've been moving things around. They've been doing it all with robots. So
taking video
video. And we do it down there because the pressures are too high. We can't get humans down there for very long. It's a very dangerous environment, so we let our robots do it. Space is exactly the same kind of environment, maybe on the exact opposite extreme. Instead of very high pressures, it's no pressure. It's of the vacuum of space, but the temperatures are extreme. It's a dangerous environment. Let's send our robots to do it, just like we're doing at the bottom of the Gulf right now. And they are incredibly capable robots today.
We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia. There was recently an impact on Jupiter, right?
That's right.
Just witnessed, right?
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. Back in 1996, many people will remember that a comet swung by Jupiter and broke into about a dozen large fragments that struck Jupiter over the course of a few weeks. And astronomers thought this was a once-in-a-lifetime thing to see. And then last year, an amateur astronomer in Australia saw another black spot on Jupiter, indicating that it had been hit by something else. So then we started wondering, how often does this happen? So the same amateur astronomer in Australia, again, was videotaping Jupiter and saw a bright flash on the planet as if something had entered Jupiter's atmosphere.
That's a lucky guy, isn't it?
It's really lucky. But what's even more lucky is if you had showed this video to astronomers, we'd look at that and say, well, that's great, but I can't be sure that it's real because only one person saw it. But there happened to be another amateur astronomer in the Philippines who was videotaping Jupiter at exactly the same time and saw exactly the same flash.
So you've got scientific confirmation
there. Exactly. Yeah. You've got two people who saw the flash at the same time. So now we've seen another giant impact on Jupiter.
Which is a meteor falling into the surface.
Meteor or comet. Yeah.
Now, Jupiter, of course, is not a terrestrial planet. It's a gas planet.
Exactly.
So the rock just sort of falls in and burns up.
It burns up, yeah. It's Jupiter's gravity is so strong that by the time this thing hits the atmosphere, it's probably moving 100,000 miles an hour or faster. And so this thing will completely obliterate in a giant fireball as it burns up in the atmosphere.
Before we let you go, the night sky, what's going on right now that folks can look out for in just a few hours here?
Yeah, the best thing to go out, especially tonight, looks like it's going to be a spectacularly clear night. Go out right after sunset, look due west, and you'll see this brilliant star right above the treetops. And that's not a star at all. That's the planet Venus. And it'll be with us all summer long. But I want everyone to go out and see it because it's by far the brightest thing up in the night sky right now. And then if they face towards the southwest and look halfway up in the sky, they'll see two stars very close together. One of those is the planet Mars, and you can tell which one it is. It'll be sort of a reddish-orange color. And the other one is the bright star Regulus in the heart of Leo the Lion.
Very cool. And there's also Saturn up as well.
And then right at sunset or as soon as it gets dark, if you face south and then turn a little bit towards the west and again look about halfway up in the sky, you'll see another bright star in Virgo that happens to be the planet Saturn. So we've got three great planets up there right now, Venus, Mars, and Saturn.
Very cool. Ed Murphy, he's with the University of Virginia. Ed, we always enjoy having you
stop by.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.